Yes.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
8 o'clock hour here on another cloudy day. I like it. I'm loving the rain so much. I even got my car washed in the rain yesterday. Yeah, went and did it. Line right here next to the station. I even went and got the car washed.
All right.
I need my foundation fixed. Stop filling my pool. Bring all the rain possible. So I loved it. You're going to love Sunday as the Cowboys are favored against the New Orleans Saints here on your home.
Just figured it out.
Of America's team, Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider, Bobby Bell. We got Pepe in the back live on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Yesterday, while Taylor Swift was showing love to her boyfriend at the VMAs, Travis Kelce, the Kelces were showing love to Dak Prescott. This is Jason and Travis on their New Heights podcast, being impressed with number 4.
Can you talk about a better day? Just sign a multi-$100 million contract and then go out there and win your first. That's a day. That is a fun experience. Well done, Dak.
I've been able to kind of hang around Dak here and there, and he was at tight end U this year, speaking his mind to all the tight ends there and giving them an idea of what the tight end position looks like through the eyes of a quarterback. And at that, the highest paid quarterback in the league. So guys were getting nuggets of gold from him, and I'm so appreciative of his time and him being able to do that. But at the same time, he is such a good guy, man. Just such a good dude, and couldn't be happier for him, especially with all the speculation through last year and the injury and having to kind of go out and prove himself, knowing he's kind of proved himself already, but did it again last year, and sure enough, now he's the highest paid player in the league.
So that's Travis talking about his interactions with Dak. My godson was at tight end U.
Well,
it was there. It was there in Nashville, I believe. And then Jason said, I may tick off some of the Eagle fans showing this amount of love to the Cowboys quarterback.
I'm going to say this, and I think it's probably going to upset some Eagles fans. I like where Dak Prescott is at right now. Like, when you can see it in his interviews, how much more comfortable he is being like a leader in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
I think early on in his career, and anybody's like this, you're going to get more generic answers. You're not going to get a lot of depth. You're not going to get really insight into who he is. And I think that's a big turning moment for a lot of players when, like, I'm just going to say whatever the f*** I want because this is where I'm at, and I'm confident in who I am and what I can do. And the last 2 years, you've seen – I just feel like he's more confident. It appears on the field, off the field – it just, I'm digging his entire vibe right now.
He's figured it out, man. Yeah. He's figured it out. So, and he knows it. And on top of that, I was talking to Chris Jones in the locker room today about it. And he was mentioning to me, he's like, man, a lot of guys don't know Dak Prescott, one of the hardest working guys out there.
Yeah.
Oh. Whoa. Did he really?
Wow. Hey. That's so.
You need to go and get the total end of that clip. It needs to go to the very end.
Oh.
Because Jason made a joke in there. You're saying Travis could get in trouble for impersonating a black guy?
I can't believe he did that.
Look at RJ's mouth.
I'm thrown.
They were teammates at Mississippi State, Chris Jones and Dax. I mean, they were there the whole time with each other, so he would know. But, man, that was Can I hear the end of that again? Holy cow, I heard the first part with Kelce yesterday, and I was like, all right, yeah, Jason Kelce, which I think Jason Kelce misses the point. It's not about Dak being more comfortable as a leader. Dak was negotiating through the media is what he was doing.
Well, also, it's like when you have, now, when you factor in his first contract, he's got $400 million in the bank. It's a lot easier to be yourself.
All right, listen to the end of that again.
Today about it, and he was mentioning to me, he's like, man, a lot of guys don't know Dak Prescott, one of the hardest working guys out there.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
I love.
How do you know this, Chris?
How do you know this, Tim Meadows?
Okay, does that save it at all at the end? How do you know this, Tim Meadows?
Wow, it's a good reference. Very good reference. I mean, I don't know.
We really do Chris Arnold like that.
Yeah, I guess. That's true. If you know the guy.
Wasn't Nate Newton talking about Chris last night?
Yeah.
He was.
I guess if you know the guy, it's different. I guess it is.
Oh my gosh, that was still funny though. That needs to be a drop whenever we're talking about Dak.
All right, Chop, this one's for you.
All right, let's do it.
All right, this is right in your wheelhouse. Yesterday on First Take, Jeff Saturday blew away and disturbed Stephen A. Smith with a Dak Prescott comparison.
I played with a quarterback who had these same question marks assigned to him for however many years, 7 years,
what?
Whatever it was, the same question was when he gets to the playoffs, he's not the same guy. He's
not like that. Don't say that. Absolutely, people said that about Peyton. I've lived it.
You're comparing him to Peyton Manning?
I'm saying how people talk about Dak Prescott, of the lights and the moments and whatever all this stuff is. The body, and you said it about Peyton. So you know, and I know, people would question what happens in big games and how this all goes.
He's 11-13 postseason.
Stephen A., look at me. You know for a fact with Peyton Manning, right, the first couple of years he struggled, but you know for a fact the knock on him has been the best regular season quarterback.
Right.
It's true.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me answer that.
Wow.
Let me answer that.
Yeah. So he's talking about from an expectations standpoint, and then.
Well, I mean, I don't even know that. I don't even know you could say that. That's more lunacy because, like, I don't know. There's a quarterback in the history of the sport that had more expectations on them.
Yeah.
Coming in.
Yeah.
Like he's like LeBron.
Maybe Elway.
Sure. Right. Yeah. But we're talking about once every 30 years.
Yes. And then Stephen A., while whining and throwing his little hissy fit, let me answer that. He answered it.
The knock against him was that he couldn't beat Brady. This man was running the offense. He was calling his own plays. We were like, anytime you run into Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, you gonna fall. I'm not saying they didn't say those things about him, but that was the prevalent issue. And Dak Prescott was never given the responsibility. Am I lying about that, Jeff? Has Dak Prescott ever had the responsibility at the quarterback position that Peyton Manning had?
No, but last year they asked a lot of him, similar to what they did of Peyton Manning. And they're asking to give him this year.
All right. He's not wrong, by the way.
No, I mean, look, the knocks on Peyton were there. Some deserve, some unfair. Same with Dak. Some deserve, some unfair. But they're there. The expectations are not the same. And maybe what they're asked to do is not the same. Like,
Jeff Saturday's right. Most of last year, Dak was asked to do stuff similar to what Peyton was during his career.
Which he called, like, Peyton, like, there was no play call.
Dak was essentially calling the offense the last half of the season.
Okay, but Peyton Manning ran no huddle, called the plays. Like you get three plays, you call them there at the line of scrimmage. You're telling me Dak Prescott
Dak was essentially calling the offense after the bye week the entire season.
All right, he's getting up to the line of scrimmage and picking between three plays.
All the stuff you saw in the touchdown to Brandon Cooks. That was Dak coming to the line of scrimmage with a certain call, and then Dak is checking into whatever he wants. That was whenever we talk about early in his career, Dak was going to the line of scrimmage in 2016. He was not making many checks at all. Like this is Dak a lot of times checking the protection and then he's making the call for what they're going to get into. He's audibling them into plays a lot.
But if McCarthy's still calling the initial play, whereas like there was that fight on the sideline. Peyton was like, Jeff, I'll call the plays. Sit there.
Did Peyton and Jim Kelly call?
Dak very rarely.
Let me ask a question. Can they call the initial play? Are they calling the initial play themselves versus Dak altering Mike's play?
I don't know what Indianapolis went to the line of scrimmage with. Dak is most of the time they are running a play that Dak has called. Most of the time the offense is running something that Dak calls at the line.
And then the final part with Stephen A. comparing Peyton to Dak and still just losing his mind over them in the same sentence.
I was at NFL Network, well, and that was a question we asked many, many times of Peyton Manning. And I guess there was the comparisons, of course, when your contemporary is Tom Brady and he keeps, like, racking up the rings. Obviously, there is truth in what you're saying
Tom
as well.
Brady
but
was
I promise
racking up
you,
the rings.
That was a
storyline.
They
were sending him home. They were sending him home, but most importantly, the point is the responsibilities that Peyton Manning had. Am I lying, Jeff, when I said this? Damn near his rookie year, Peyton Manning, if not his rookie year, literally, certainly year two, the man was running the damn offense. Okay,
he was.
That's how brilliant he was. Everything was handed to him. Mike McCarthy had Kellen Moore booted out of Dallas so he could call the plays. The responsibilities that was on Dak Prescott's shoulders don't come remotely close to the responsibilities that was on Peyton Manning's shoulders. Y'all got to be kidding me. Y'all can't say this on national television, man. You can't do this.
Flat out ignorance. It's flat out ignorance of what the Cowboys were asking Dak to do last year. Mike McCarthy didn't call the offense last 11 weeks of the season. That's why things changed. Like, if you look at, like, what the offense was the first 5 weeks, and then you look at the rest of the year.
They ditched his...
It is not the same offense. If you watch the first five weeks, it's not the same offense.
Like, I think what Steve is trying to say, my guess is that Mike still called a play in. You're called in.
No. I think what Stephen A. is saying here is that he does not believe that Dak is in control of the offense the same way Peyton is, and it's not true. At the snap, they're calling something that Dak put them into almost every time.
Then what's Mike saying in his ear?
Mike can come to it with any sort of call he wants to initially have. If Dak has five things that he's going to check into, Dak is almost always checking into it,
yes.
The expectation is going to the line of scrimmage. Dak is going to check them into something.
Which I think most of the time. Lion's share of the veteran quarterbacks would do.
No, not the vast majority of quarterbacks. They're not calling it the way
the veteran.
I think what we're trying to straighten out here is Peyton Manning picking any page out of the playbook to start the call with versus Dak altering or checking what Mike started with.
To me, it's like, I'm trying to think of what's a good comparison for how,
know
like,
what I mean?
Little. Yeah. I understand.
Like, is Peyton starting from more scratch every play than Dak?
No, because they're basically starting with a blank canvas. Whether Peyton picks it or McCarthy picks it or however the setup is, when they get to the line of scrimmage, it's equal in the amount of times that they're running something that the quarterback called. It's Dak is calling, putting them into plays that they are snapping the ball with a play that Dak has essentially chosen most of the time to a Peyton Manning like extent.
Okay. Maybe we need to figure out a better way of doing a demo on this, like Orlovsky would probably figure out on TV, like relaying something, explaining what Dak would do with that.
Right.
You know, it could be a fun radio exercise. There it is.
Yeah, Orlovsky. He's great. His demos are great.
Well, he was a teammate of Peyton's too, I think.
Yeah. But Orlovsky's also a Lion POS, so it doesn't totally matter.
877-881-1053 is the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. I see you on YouTube. I'm watching your comments, so I got that basic target on you.
Uh-oh.
I'm seeing it. I'm watching you, Juan. Go ahead. Keep it up. 877-881-1053. Don't give Juan's a bad name. That my guy at Chevy, a Platinum Chevy. Don't make me think of the Juans like that. All right. We have Babe Laufenberg
at
840 here on DFW Sports Station to preview the Saints game. But tonight is Kumar time. Time to rock. Time to rock on the home of the Rangers. And an NBA Finals rematch is happening, according to Bobby's favorite NBA player. Next on Sean and RJ.
1-2 from Anderson. A swing and a long drive to right. Back goes Adolis. He's on the track. He's at the wall. He leaps, and it is gone. It's a 3-run homer, and it's the 4th home run for Arizona today.
Ooh. Rangers get smoked in the game, in the series, 14-4. They lose the series 20-4, and they saw their old buddy Jordan Montgomery on the mound last night getting the save with 3 innings pitched, gave up 2 hits, no earn, no strikeouts.
Yeah, the rare 3 innings save, very Goose Gossage.
Without a strikeout.
Yeah, what was it? It was like the last 5 innings of the game, Arizona walked 3 Texas batters. I don't think they got a strikeout in the last 5 innings, and Texas still couldn't really do anything.
He is beefy.
But yes. You know what? He may win another World Series.
They're a good team. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs.
They've been really good in the last 2 months or so.
Of course, tonight is the debut of Kumar Rocker going up against, well, Thursday Night Football is going to start first with Bills Dolphins, and then 8:40 first pitch on the Fan with Bobby's new favorite pitcher.
Yeah, which I'm going to have to get clarity from Sandler because somebody's already correcting us nonstop on the fan text. It's not Kumar.
It's Kumar.
It's Kumar, and that's what they're saying.
Well, we have Dawson Sandler 2.0 after tonight.
Yeah, guess what? I've seen Harold and Kumar. I didn't see Harold and Kumar.
Okay, Jared, goodbye.
So you know my rule. The moment a name is established as that's the pronunciation of those letters together, that's the pronunciation of those letters together.
I wonder if I could, and I'm genuinely excited to watch this tonight. I'm probably not going to get much sleep. I'm going to have to take one of these little afternoon naps before I go do my my Rally House appearance in Arlington from 4 to 6 p.m. today. That's the one on 309 Curtis Mathis Way, which maybe you can get a Kumar Rocker jersey there. I don't know. Maybe you can get lots of Rangers gear. But I'm going to have to take a nap so that I can make sure that I can stay up and watch.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
So this 9-inning no-hitter from Kumar Rocker.
There you go.
Because that's what I'm expecting right out of the gate. No, I haven't learned from my high expectations for Jack Leiter or my high expectations out of the gate for Wyatt Langford. I'm saying we're gonna get Jabba Chamberlain for the next month.
Yeah. Jabba Chamberlain.
Wow, just keep the flies away. I'll tell you, like, considering where he was over an extended stretch of his last year, you know, like he had the issues in basically the Rangers got gifted him in the draft, right? And then he had the injuries. My expectations are zero. This is not like a
zero.
It's not a Jack Leiter thing. We're like, oh my God, you know, the expectations, because there was a time last year where it was like, man, we're just never going to see this guy. He's always hurt, yada, yada, yada. The fact that he's here, that to me today is enough. I'm just excited to see him.
I asked ChatGPT the other day. I was like, hey, tell me what you know about Kumar Rocker. This is what they said. Rocker features a four-pitch mix headlined by a plus-plus slider that serves as his primary out pitch, showcasing late sharp break in the mid-80s. His fastball sits comfortably in the 97-98 range and has touched 100 miles per hour, displaying good riding life from a high arm slot. Rocker's command is average, but he projects as a high-variance prospect with frontline starter potential.
Jason Tatum went on Fallon and was asked for his 2025 NBA Finals matchup.
Predict which two teams will be in the NBA Finals next summer.
Ooh, the Boston Celtics.
Say it!
It's going to be a rematch. We're going to play Dallas again.
Hey!
Wow. Unoriginal again. He has to repeat the finals he just played in. What a loser.
I was just about to say, a reason for us to give him props. But the unoriginal, that fits. You got to talk about this crazy Joe Mazzulla profile.
Joe Mazzulla, if he was, thank God that he was given an outlet like basketball, because this guy would be a murderer if it were not for basketball. I'm convinced of it. He is insane. So Joe Mazzulla did an interview recently and it was recapped over at the Boston Sports Journal. And the stuff that he talks about is nuts. He talks about this past summer, how, it was a normal summer. He talks about riding the duck boats through Boston streets during the championship parade and celebrating with the fans. He says, I had to match the energy of the people. It was a release because it was one of the times where I could be as intense as the people around me. This is the most intense, passionate thing I've ever been part of. Why? When you hear him talk about stuff like that, that sounds like psychopath stuff. When you say, for once I was able to connect with humans and match their energy, I felt their life force feeding into me. He talks about how he needs to stress humility and a continuous commitment to improvement as the team prepares for the upcoming season, and the unconventional inspiration he draws from nature, likening his players to killer whales. He says they rarely attack their prey by themselves. There's a huge humility aspect to that. You think that he's like, man, these killer whales. Like, what does he think that he thinks orcas actively are just like, hey, we got to have humility as we try to eat this seal. Like, we need to work together as a team. Yeah. I mean, they definitely work together as a team. They do work together. Yeah. They do, but I don't think any of it's like, let's talk about how humble we all need to be as we approach killing this seal.
Let's ask Dak for advice on going after, you know, other prey.
He says Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, those are two killer whales. Two orcas right there that he thinks they work together. But he found teaching moments throughout the summer in his time away from the Celtics. He talks about baseball games to Broadway shows. He says he went to a Boston Red Sox game. It was a comeback against the Toronto Blue Jays, noting a dropped infield fly ball that changed the game's outcome. He uses this to teach his players about the importance of fundamentals and attention to detail, stating, you have to commit to the details and you have to have an understanding of what goes into winning and losing. But here's how miserable this guy is and what a psycho he is.
So what did he take from the fly ball?
He said that you have to show like it because the Blue Jays missed a pop fly and then they end up coming back. The Red Sox come back from that late in the game. And so he's like, see, this is right here. It's the little things that get you killed. If they would have caught that pop fly, then things would have been different. But here's how big a nut job he is. He ruined his wife's summer vacation away from basketball. So
like
he took
the former Celtics coach?
He took for different reasons. He took her to the US Open. So it's like, okay, this is nice. This is a place to be seen. It's apparently a great event that people like when they go
golf
to
or tennis.
Tennis. Okay. And they say it's one of these like
apparently it's a great event.
People describe it, say it's like one of the best sporting events you can go to.
Nighttime, electric, New York.
Yeah. He took his wife to the US Open and ruined it. Because he spent the entire time, he couldn't just watch tennis. He spent the entire time charting unforced errors by the players and keeping track of how often the players would talk to their coaches. He was just curious to see what they would do.
Aren't you not allowed to talk to your coach during a tennis match?
I don't know. I would imagine it's like during a break when you're sitting down or whatever.
Yeah, you're not really supposed to be like conversing.
Maybe that's why he was tracking.
That's what they do, the hand signals.
So maybe that's exactly it. Now
you're telling me he was writing this down.
That's what he said. He said he was charting how often they were doing it. Made even worse. You go to a Broadway show.
Challenge flag.
Wait, what?
I'm throwing the challenge flag on that one.
You think he's lying?
I'm not buying that one.
I'm not buying it.
He's so crazy though. I could see him like thinking, "Oh, that was communication. I saw it.
He probably maybe started to do it, and his wife was like, "Dude, simmer the blank."
Well,
down.
You know what she said? She said, "Stop this. Let's go see Hamilton." Okay, I don't know if they saw Hamilton, but they went to a Broadway show. Okay, so they go to a Broadway show. Certainly, there's nothing that he can track there, right? Wrong. Joe Mazzulla managed to ruin this for his wife, too. He sat there taking notes.
This is like the belt marriage.
Yeah.
He sat there taking notes on how the performers were regulating their breathing between talking and singing.
Okay.
That's how he managed to ruin the Broadway performance. This guy is a psychopath. He is a nut.
Yes. Yes.
I don't even know what to say. Like, this is not real. This is not a real person. This is Russell Wilson as a coach.
Now, he did note, after all the difficulties that, which, by the way, hit a couple interesting notes there. He said Indiana, despite sweeping them, he was like, that was the hardest series we played. He's like, that game, that should have gone seven games. He said, we should have had a seven game series there, which in reality, they should have lost two of those at least.
Yes.
But he talked about how hard that was. But he said, as hard as it is, his one hope for this season. He said, I hope it's 10 times harder than it was last year.
Oh, shut up.
This dude is the worst.
Babe Laufenberg coming up at 8:40 on the home of the Cowboys to preview the Saints.
Okay, am I hearing this right? The morning show is letting Peyton Russell have his own segment? I just don't get it. We've known Peyton for years. He's horrible on the mic. I mean, gathering the foreigners, this is going to be a train wreck.
Daddy does work, and Peyton just does board hopping. Yep.
Look, you show up late because of traffic, and you get not one but two segments today.
And so, you're out tomorrow, so you get more airtime today.
Well, how about that? Yep, I'll be gone this weekend.
You get rewarded for being late.
Thank you. Bobby does not. All right, guys, you guys all have kids. Have you traveled with them on an airplane? I imagine a lot of us have.
Yep.
Kristen has with Addison. I've never traveled with the kids.
Well, one of the worst experiences of my entire life.
Ooh, okay, so how do you calm down Ollie on the plane?
Drugs.
Drugs.
Melatonin. Kids melatonin. Backfired. Because of the delay in the airport, it had timed out perfectly. He knocked out, 3-hour delay, boarding, he woke
awake.
Up.
Oh, baby.
Tart cherry juice, man. That's what Bassick drinks to go to sleep.
Tart cherry juice.
It's got natural like melatonin in it.
Sign me up.
So this story here is for all the parents with kids that they take on airplane, on flights, and I really hope you're not like this mom, because this mom deserves not mom of the year here. Because we have this mom here on this flight, mom with her daughter. The daughter's on the iPad.
Hang on. Start.
This is what happens when you give them 2 seconds.
You don't know? Reset.
I'm trying to. Okay. All right. All right. This mom is on a flight with a daughter.
Got it.
The daughter has an iPad. You know, just keeping calm, keeping it to herself. Across the aisle is another mom with a son. The son does not have an iPad. The mom has stated, my son doesn't have an iPad because we don't do iPads on vacation. So he just has to sit there and be in silent and talk to his parents. The son sees the daughter with the iPad and says, mom, well, I want to be on the iPad because the daughter has it. So the mom with the son, that's anti-iPad, anti-fun, then goes over to the daughter and tells the mom, hey, can you tell your daughter to take away the iPad? Because my son doesn't have one because we're anti-iPad on vacation. So the
put
the mom
yours away because mine doesn't have theirs.
Exactly. And I'm like, okay, that I'm not a parent, but you know, controlling the other kid here, that's a pet peeve of mine. You know, trying to parent someone else's kid.
Yeah, it's this is so look, I understand, I respect that we don't do iPads on vacation. But you're not on vacation yet. You're in a tube.
Wait for that plane to land.
You wait for the plane to land, then you take it away.
Yes.
You know, you want to be tough guy parent. Great, cool. Wait till you get to your destination because there's not a kid in the world. I
believe the Joe Mazzulla story over this. Yeah. I don't believe that a mom or a parent would have the balls to go across the aisle and say, put yours away because this is the rule in our house. I don't believe this.
Somebody told me to turn off Air Disasters on the plane.
And what is that?
It's a show that like dives into the investigation. Why did this plane crash?
Was the volume up?
No.
All right, well, I can at least see that. Like you're previewing death.
Yeah.
All right.
The plane,
you're falling into the ocean. Of plane crashes. That's disturbing.
It's on my phone, and there was a seat empty between us. You don't have to look at my
phone.
Where
were they sitting?
They were on the outside seat. I was on the window.
Yeah, I'm not justifying it. They should keep their own, you know, mind your own damn business.
But I believe in the nosiness and the, like, the crappiness of people that there might be somebody on a plane who could do this.
So did a fight or tussle happen? What was the end result?
The mom with the daughter with the iPad, she basically just said, you know, screw you, I'm not going to do it. And so, which is what most parents should do here. I mean, Sean, that would be like if, you know, Bobby with, you know, Laura in public and you're with Ollie and you're telling Ollie, you know, no, you can't have ice cream just because Laura's having ice cream. Yeah. He, you know, he's complaining. Then you tell Bobby, hey, tell Laura to put up the ice
cream. That's why all the other parents hate us, including Bobby's wife, because we're the candy parents. We're the treats. Like, hey.
Oh, you got all the treats?
Oh, I got all the treats. I want to give your kids sugar. And they're like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, too bad. They're in my house. If my kid's going to get candy, I'm going to give your kids candy. You don't like it? Get out.
This did happen. Not exactly like that, but like where Ollie was eating candy at the end of the party, and I told Laura, I was like, all right, you're done. And then Laura's like, but Ollie's... I was like, great, that's Ollie's... Like, that's what Mr. Sean and Miss Amanda have decided. You're not getting any more candy.
Did she not get any?
I think she stole a sucker.
Yeah.
Behind my back.
Yeah, I just can't... We come out, we like... I don't think Eric will let his... Eric's wife won't come around us anymore because we have, you know...
You make it rain sugar.
Process sugar around.
It's the cheapest way to get rid of people.
What?
Just give their kids candy if they don't want them.
Keep them away?
Just keep them away.
Yeah.
It's the easiest and cheapest way. Give them suckers and
a booster.
Or a booster. Wow.
All right. So there's an extra edition of The Payload with Philip Russell. What?
Bobby and I. We just have.
You need a separate camera just for y'all. Y'all do your own show.
That's six times a show this happens.
Babe Laufenberg previews the Saints. Maybe one quarterback will show up this hour. Next.
Oh!
Next on Sean and RJ.
So Kevontae Turpin's going to stand at his 35 and wait for the punt from Corey Bjorkus.
Yeah, and they have had a couple of good returns. I mean, he's been real close to breaking one. But a couple of nice returns, but looking for the big one. Maybe it'll come right here with the Browns backed up a little bit.
The kick actually comes from the goal line. A little end-over-end wobbler taken at the 40 by Turpin. Trying to get up the middle, 50, 45, get a block. Right sideline, 30, he's pointing. 20 and to the 15, to the 10. There's your return.
Babe Laufenberg on the call.
He did that with Kalen Carson in the interception a couple weeks ago.
That doesn't count.
It does.
I hope, babe, you're not taking credit for calling that, are you?
You are kidding me, aren't you? I mean, I didn't listen. People say, hey, how Brady sound? I'm like, how would I know? I'm doing the same game he is.
Right.
I didn't get to hear it. Did he call that?
I don't believe he did.
He did not.
Okay. Okay. So why the hell would you listen to him?
Babe Loffenberg, Cowboys color analyst, seer of the future here on 105.3 The Fan. Good morning.
Good morning. I will tell you, I told Bones, the special teams coach, thank you for making me sound smart. He said, hey, well, let me know when it's going to happen again. I said, no, you got to let me know when it's going to happen again. Okay, ready for your trivia?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, number four is not really a common number for a quarterback, is it? But, I mean, you think of 12, you got Bradshaw, you got Namath, you got Staubach. But last week they played Deshaun Watson, right, number four.
Yep.
Dak, number four. This week, Dak goes against Derek Carr. What number does he wear?
Four.
Okay. So.
Oh, so we all won the trivia. Yes.
Yes.
We're on the board.
No, that would be September trivia. You know how McCarthy talks about September football? That would be September trivia. So Derek Carr has the third most touchdowns by a player who has worn the number four, passing, 73. Dak Prescott has the second most, 74. Who is the leader in terms of touchdown passes who wore the number four?
Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Well, September trivia.
Suck it, Peyton.
Dang it.
In your face.
How many did he have? How many did he have, guys?
How many career touchdown passes?
Yeah, Prescott has 74. Carr has 73.
507.
482.
Peyton, do you know?
I believe it would be 186, right?
Yeah, 186. Yep.
186.
There's not a chance in hell that Brett Favre has only 186 touchdowns.
Remember, he wore a different number.
What?
This is just by wearing the number four.
There's no way. I'm looking this
up. What was his other number? What?
He wore number four his whole career, babe.
Oh, my God. Did we get Babe Loffenberg? Did we turn his own trivia against them?
Even still, I was wrong. He only threw 336 touchdown passes. Or no, 508. 508. 508.
I said 504. I said 507, right? I knew Manning snapped it.
508.
But they were all his number four, babe.
Yeah. 508?
And Dak has way more than 73, I think.
Dak had like 40 last year.
Babe, I think you butchered all of this.
No, Dak's got 203.
Babe, are you unwell? Are you unwell?
And he wants credit for calling the Turpin return. And how about we should...
I have 245.
Who gave you this? Was this Zero? Did Zach Rowe give you this trivia info?
Sham?
Hey, Zach's my guy.
I was like, what other numbers did he wear in Minnesota with the Jets?
You ready?
Yeah, hit us.
Okay, move on.
G-bag of the day. All right, the Saints. More impressive than you thought, or the Panthers are that terrible?
A good question. Like anything, probably a little of both. But I will say this now. The Saints last year, they won four of their last five games. So they've now won five of six. The Saints could have been the Cowboys' wild card opponent last year. Uh-huh. They had the same record as Green Bay. They lost the tiebreaker because of common opponents, you know. But they also lost the tiebreaker at 9-8 to win the division. Tampa Bay was also 9-8. So all those tiebreakers that you kind of don't pay too much attention to, they all came into play for New Orleans. So, yeah, they're a decent team, but should they come in here to AT&T and beat the Cowboys? Probably not, but are they capable of it? Yes.
What are the top things to worry about with them, whether it's on offense or defense?
Well, Kamara is always, to me, a little bit of a handful. I know last year he didn't have a great year. I'm not a fantasy player, but I'm sure the fantasy players could tell you a little bit more, but his numbers were all way down from what he has been. But he's still a dangerous player. Derek Carr, hey, we saw him come in with the Raiders, right, to AT&T a couple of years ago and had a fantastic game. He's fully capable of getting hot, right? So they can be a part. Their defense has been good. It's kind of always been good. It's kind of always been, to me, a little bit overlooked. I don't like to use the word underrated, but overlooked. They can present some problems, no question.
Babe, if you blitz Dak, like the stats show that he kind of really makes you pay for it.
Right.
Is that the same with Carr? Like, or is that how you can you get to him? Or is there a spot where, like, if you do something, he really takes advantage of it?
You know, honestly, I have not dug in to all the New Orleans tape, but again, he's a strong-armed, good quarterback. I think, you know, he's he's been with the damn Raiders. You know, I know last year, obviously, he was in New Orleans, but that's just you're fighting an uphill battle trying to win in that organization, and I think he played a lot better than what that team was. Or, you know, again, it's a hard place to win. It's like every quarterback that has gone to the Jets, it's just a burial ground for quarterbacks, right? And you know, Favre.
Especially Favre.
Well, all of them, you know, I mean, for the last, since Namath, and we'll see what happens with Rodgers. You know, yeah. He did not look great, but now, hey, he's 40 years old coming off an Achilles. So, but anyway, long and short is, I think being with the Raiders, as in, you know, be it Oakland, Las Vegas, is a tough place to win. It was a tough organization to overcome. And, you know, we'll see what happens here in New Orleans.
Babe Laufenberg joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Babe, what did you think of the debut with Mike Zimmer, and specifically Trayvon Diggs talking about how, hey, we got into maybe 5% of the looks on the calls that Mike Zimmer's got in his bag?
Yeah, obviously a great performance right off the bat. And I actually asked Zimmer the question on Monday at the coordinators thing. You know, how important is it? He's been through this a number of times, right? You go to Cincinnati, you're putting in your defense. You go to Minnesota, you're putting in your defense. How important is it to come off and play well in that first game? Because as he pointed out, you know, this defense was pretty good. Most times you're taking over because the year before, the defense or the offense, depending on your coordinator position, right, they sucked. And it's like, we got to get a new guy here. Mm-hmm. So then teams are willing to embrace the new philosophy because you say, God, we were so bad last year. Any change is better than what we had. But that wasn't the case here. They were good. They were really good. And so you tend to meet with a little resistance when that happens. I always say Chan Gailey had the toughest job coming in here, no matter what you think of Chan Gailey. They had a whole bunch of guys that had won Super Bowls, doing it a certain way in a particular offense. And so you're going to be a little resistant. You say, hey, wait a minute now. Why are we changing up what we've won 3 Super Bowls with? Because even through the changes, you know, when Norv Turner left, Ernie Zampezi, who taught Norv Turner the offense, came in as the offensive coordinator. And they won that Super Bowl in 96 against Pittsburgh. So I think the long and short is they're all selling something. Coaches are all selling something. And it's really not all that much different. But the whole key is to get your players to buy into what you're selling. And you have a game like that. We heard all the remarks after the game, all the comments. You know, they bought in. Now Zimmer can say, you come back into that Monday morning meeting and you say, see, if we play the technique that we're teaching, that I'm teaching, we do the things that I'm teaching, it's going to work. And the players all saw it work.
What do you think he's teaching the most different from a Dan Quinn defense?
Well, they disguise it a lot more. They play linebackers at the linebacker position, which is different. You know, the big defensive tackles. And, hey, there's a lot of ways. One thing I don't like about what happened in Cleveland and Zimmer and the whole thing is it's almost this notion of, thank God we got rid of Dan Quinn. Thank God we got rid of that guy. And
yeah. He
came in here. He took over a defense that was awful in 2020. With Mike Nolan. I mean, awful.
Dan Quinn did a damn good job.
He did.
So I hate the notion that, well, thank God he's gone, because he did do a great job. And again, there are different ways. You know, everybody plays defense differently, right? Pittsburgh has played a 3-4 for about 50 years. And there's 4-3 teams and 3-4 teams. But I'll say this. I think they went from one very good defensive coordinator to another very good defensive coordinator.
Second half offense this past week kind of stalled out.
Was that a
concern, or do you think they were just not trying to give anything away? Because they had that in the bag.
No, I mean, yeah, did they maybe run some trick plays that they have, and you say, hey, let's wait for that. After the Turpin punt return, which I called, by the way, I don't know if you guys are aware of that. No, I mean, that was the opening drive for Cleveland in the second half, and then it became 27-3, and I just think you lose a little bit of your urgency offensively. even defensively to a certain extent. But the big thing on that second half, you know, they were 0 for 5 on third downs, and all the third downs were third and six or longer. So they were getting penalized in those drives. You know, you got a third and 12, third and 14. You're not going to pick those up for the most part. But, yeah, you'd certainly like to see them convert a couple, right? You know, they had a couple of third and sixes, but that prevented them from, you know, getting another set of downs and sustaining drives. But, you know, offensively, it kind of got obscured, quite honestly, in my opinion. It was a very average offensive performance. I mean, yes. They were 4-14 on third downs. They only averaged 4.4 a play. They had 265 yards of total offense. Those are not winning numbers, but obviously when the defense played the way they did, you get a punt return for a touchdown. That game became a little bit of a laugher.
Mike McCarthy tomorrow, Jerry Jones Tuesday, both of them now taking back seats to Babe Laufenberg trivia. I cannot wait for it next Thursday at 8:40. Thank you, brother.
Okay, and very quickly, you got to cut Bobby Hebert some slack. Remember, he's in New Orleans, you know?
Yeah. And what, because of the wind and the storm?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a hurricane down there, goodness sake.
Is it like happening right now?
Yeah, I think that's what the Dan Brunoff email said. It made landfall.
Okay. All right. Well, you're right, babe. My apologies.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, you guys have a great day.
You
sorry
too.
For the screw up on the trivia.
That was amazing. It was amazing. Babe Laufenberg on the DNM leasing hotline. Is the National Football League even more popular in your house than it has been? And how popular was Shannon Sharp yesterday after the audio that came out? Final hour, Thursday edition after this.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.